The Disciplined Investor is underwritten by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges USD margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.59%. Of course, rates are subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company. From seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Bezos is up in space, but back home, bond yields keep coming down. A resurgence of the pandemic trade and investors are taking cover. Our guest today is Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. All this and much more on episode number 724 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey there, welcome. Welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Of course, I'm DH Unplugged as well. You know that already. Well, we've talked about a lot. We've gone over all sorts of things the last few weeks, and particularly last week when we talked about what was going on with bonds and really got down to the bottom of why, in fact, we saw such an incredible bid towards bonds and kind of went through the structure of researching and finding out what it was all about to understand better what to do with it. And, you know, we talked about and we came up with the idea and the final components of all the things that we put together to realize it was all about a safety trade that was predicated on the news that we are seeing about the pandemic, the Delta variant and Delta Plus, and who knows where it's going from here. But there was a resurgence, a newfound concern over what was going to happen at this next stage as seemingly the pandemic is unleashing concern for economic growth on a worldwide basis as it now once again flourishes through the summer. So we talked about that, and lo and behold, there we are. We come into this week, and we start seeing a continuation of that theme where bond yields are coming in, hit 1.12% on Monday, and that freaked out markets as that bid or that flight to safety went on again. Well, a lot going on there, and I think it's important to really understand why it's happening, because you're going to see that as we see the ebb and flow of this information and as the realization of earnings are better or worse or economics are not really slowing down into this or maybe even just hanging in there, that maybe some of this has been overthought and maybe overdone. And, you know, we brought a guest on today to really discuss the inner workings of what's going on with the markets, understanding about what's happening, because actually, I was on his show last week, and I'm like, you know what? We got to get you back on. It's been since like May, and everybody loves you. So we're bringing on Frank Curzio from Curzio Research to talk about a variety of things that are on my mind. One of the things that's interesting about Frank and myself, we do a lot of talking offline, off the podcast line, off of the microphone. And we talk about a variety of things. And some of our things that we talk about are where we agree. But there's a lot of things we don't, Frank, also, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, the bottom line, Ryan, thank you for that intro. I don't know if everybody loves me.
Everybody loves you.
Good thing if everybody loves you, right? You want some people not to like you, at least. It puts things in perspective. But yeah, you know what? And at disagreements too, I mean, it used to be okay to disagree. Now you're not allowed. It's either yes, no, black, white, or that's it, right? Even in politics where, you know, for me, I like the disagreements because I want to hear your side. What am I getting wrong? Then we research, and the bottom line is to get this right, especially from an investment perspective. But a lot of times that doesn't happen. If you disagree with someone, they don't like you anymore. And I still like you, Andrew. You're a good guy.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Frank. Thanks a lot. You know, it's interesting, though, about that you mentioned that, because a lot of what I've been discussing over the last several episodes has been this discussion of stop thinking about what you're thinking about and let's look out there and what other people are thinking about and how they're framing the discussion and understanding of what's going on and look at the perspective outside of what you may believe and let's figure out what's happening and do it from the aspect of how does this impact my investments? Not whether you want to take a vaccine or you don't, or whether you want to go out or not. But how does what is happening out there with others impact your investments and then making appropriate investment decisions based on that? Does that's kind of a sensible thing to do, right?
It is. It definitely is, because we all have a personal opinion about things, especially COVID, right? I mean, I live in Florida and people think, you know, we're crazy here. No,
we are.
Crazy.
We are.
You saw a couple of pictures on the beach, but I was wearing masks where we are. We're north, but right. You know, we're wearing masks indoors. Suggesting, you know, listen, if you're in that danger zone over 65, get the vaccine. We know it targets most. And if you're young and your kids, nothing's going to happen to you, which is 99.9% of the time. And you know, we just went accordingly. But it wasn't like, hey, no one's wearing masks. And in other places, it's you better wear two masks, you know? There's a big difference depending on where you live. But the bottom line is, what do we all want? We want what's best for our family, right? We want to have money when we retire. And sometimes you have to put your personal feelings aside. And I always say, look, if you don't believe in something, hey, feel free to hold up a sign. You could do that, whatever you want. But this is what's going to happen. I mean, invest in the banks. I mean, yes, you know, outside of inflation, yes, and interest rates coming down. When you have a market conditions like these where you know, they just throw money, government, Fed throwing money, $10.5 trillion more is coming, this infrastructure. I don't know, what did they say the infrastructure bill is? $4 or $5 billion, what was it? $5 trillion, it went from...
$1.5 trillion to once we pass that, just to let you know, we're going to cram this other $4.5 $5 trillion down your throat through reconciliation.
So what does that mean? More money into the system. You see interest rates continue to be low. It's a perfect environment for the banks. They're so strong because of the laws put in place that was supposed to not make them too big to fail. Now they're about 6x the times. That's how much bigger they are now, right, than these laws. Because you can't have – it's the only industry, I think, where you can't have a mid-cap, small-cap become a mega bank. It's just the laws don't allow it. You're not allowed.
Well, because they'll just buy you up.
Well, and not even that. It's just the capital requirements left on their books. So they have so much capital. It's like 4x the amount of capital required. And now finally the government's like, well – you could do a couple things with them, okay? You could buy back your stock, which they're all doing. They're going to raise their dividend in a low interest rate environment. Again, I hate the banks. None of them got punished. Nobody went to jail. But this is about your family. You know, to me, that's a good example saying, hey, own a bank. We've owned Goldman Sachs for a year now. We're about 75%. I don't care about last week's move, coming down a little bit, inflation. Again, we get these scares every now and then. But we have low interest rates. People have a lot of money right now. There's more loans going out. People getting approved. They're seeing less loan losses on their books across the board. I mean,
which is why, that's an interesting point, though. The recent earnings reports that came out the last two quarters, and particularly this quarter, the loan loss provisions that were put back onto the balance sheet from when they were, kind of had to be extracted to the debt side, to the asset side, to the income side, if you will, really helped their earnings substantially, which was interesting. That's number one. The number two, talk about banks. Talk about how, listen, you got to be in the banks in certain cycles. And even if you hate the banks, someone once said a very famous line. They said, if reincarnation is true, if there's such a thing as reincarnation, if I die and when I die, I want to come back as a bank, because you can never fail. It's rigged. It is. There's a couple of industries that are like that, right? That no matter what happens, it's just impossible. Because if there is a cataclysmic outage, a situation that comes up that burns the bank so badly to the ground, the rest of the financial system is just obliterated as well.
Yeah, you don't need it to be burned to the ground, as we see. All you need is a 15% correction, and the Fed's there for you in a heartbeat these days, right?
Right.
Which is crazy. But
good point.
Look, one of the things I noticed, which surprised me, maybe it's not that surprising, but JP Morgan reported, and they reported great results like everybody else. Revenue was down year over year about 5-6%. But they said, despite these great results, they saw losses a little bit. What they struggled with was more people were paying down their credit cards and paying their mortgages. That's how much people have today. I mean, they're paying down their bills and they're still taking money and throwing it out in the economy. So it's not even, hey, we got all this money, let's keep it in the bank and save it. They're taking it, they're lowering their debt, which is not the greatest thing for the economy when you're looking for more money to flow through the economy. it's great personally. People are getting strong in their balance sheets. Household wealth is at record high because people's homes are going through the roof. But I just thought that was interesting that they have enough money to spend on so many different things. Consumer spending through the roof. Look at Best Buy. Look at Dick's Sporting Goods. I mean, look at the numbers that these guys are reporting. Nike, even the restaurants, leisure restaurants. And yet they also have enough money to pay off their credit cards and mortgages, which was
so surprising. Are we in the roaring 20s? Is that how you're kind of framing this whole thing, that we are back to a situation that kind of, there was a pandemic back in the 17, 18, you know, through the 19 period, early of 1900s. And kind of 100 years later, a very similar circumstance. And whether or not the roaring 20s and flappers and speakeasies and all that was predicated on the pandemic back then or not, but there was something that happened that was a revival of consumerism, right? Of me first, of making myself happy. Is that where we're going now?
You know, it's a good question, because if you look back at the roaring 20s, I would say the speculation is similar to today. Not that I'm a professional on that, but you look at the speculation, right? When things are good, people are taking out more debt. So today we have speculation where we've seen SPACs go all over the place. Now you're seeing SPACs get hit because, you know, we could talk about that later, but because now they have to disclose what they're all about, how much money these guys are making. Even if these things go from 10 to 17, they buy a company, they go down to 3, the insiders are making money, they're not disclosing. They're not disclosing the warrants and things like that, right? Then you have, you know, look what we're seeing with crypto. The amount of margin that's in crypto is incredible.
Can I ask you about that? I'm sorry to stop you, but mm-hmm. that is something I've been hearing about a lot lately, and maybe this is something that I really don't understand. Mm-hmm. But it is my understanding that in the U.S., as a U.S. citizen buying cryptocurrencies, you are not able to go on margin. Is that wrong? You're not able to go short.
No, have the margin. Anybody can get margin. Very easy. I mean, you can go to Gemini. You can go wherever you want.
And they'll give you how much margin?
Yes. Yeah, the margin requirement. There's easy ways around it right now. There's not really a lot of laws around crypto. You want proof of that? All these things outside of the top 5 or 7, you could argue that Bitcoin's not a security. You could argue that Ethereum with smart contracts is not, Litecoin, maybe a few others, stable coins, Tether and things like that. But for the rest of them, they're all securities. And if they're deemed securities, they have to report with the SEC. And these guys, let me tell you, the money that they raised, that's gone. These people bought houses. You don't know what's – you can't find any financials on anything. I mean, you don't get equity stakes in these companies, and they're not deemed right now. But the SEC wants to come out and say, hey, these are securities. These guys are dead. You know, a lot of these guys could get nailed. But the amount of margin and the interest and the yield farming and things like that, and they're not explaining how they're able to pay these high yields, they're, I mean, you could leverage yourself 50x plus.
Maybe
right?
It was a few years ago when I did this, Frank, that there was an availability for U.S. citizens to get leveraged through like Bitfinex and Bittrex and
some of those are even like Binance had to create a Binance US division, but Coinbase, of course, you know, Coinbase with margin, of course. So, you know, you want to look at your margin requirements, but right now you're talking about young kids who made a fortune on Bitcoin because they were there early. And what are they doing? Well, I just turned $10,000 to $1 million. Okay, well, it could have been faster if I leveraged this to $6-7 million, not understanding what a margin call is. And now, you know, you wonder why these drastic moves and this huge volatility. That's you know, margin calls, you know, debt coming out of that market, and you're seeing it. And then that leverage itself, I'm a big believer in crypto. But, you know, getting back to your original question with the speculation in the 20s, I mean, there's a lot of speculation here, but we're not – I mean, the companies today, the bigger companies, the bigger names, right? Because, you know, what happened? When you say roaring 20s, everyone thinks, okay, what happened after that? We saw, you know, the Great Depression and everything collapse. I mean, look at how strong these companies are. Mm-hmm. They're trillion-dollar companies with hundreds of billions of dollars on their balance sheet, right? They're buying back stock. They're much, much, much stronger than they've ever been. So I don't really think there's a comparison. I think we learn through times, right? When we saw, the 2000 dot-com collapse, Andrew, right? What happened? A lot of these dot-com companies, some of them existed. The ones that did are fantastic today. There's a reason why those are the same companies that have the strongest balance sheets. Because they're preparing, saying, hey, if this happens, we got the money, we got the cash, we're perfectly fine. So the fact that they're stronger and how much they've learned over the years, I think it's a different, much, much different scenario. When you're looking at, say, the top 100 companies, which in the S&P 500, which probably account for, if I had to guess, 90% of the entire market cap, 95% of the entire market cap of all market cap, those are much, 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 much stronger than they've been today. That said, small caps, ESG companies, I mean, what's been the model over the past 5-7 years? Spend as much money as you can. We don't care, right? You raise money, series A, B, C, D, E, F. You come out like a snowflake at a whatever $10, $20, $30, $70 billion valuation. You don't have any earnings. You know what? When inflation kicks in, and which it's here, I don't care, you could say the 10-year whatever. That's one little metric. And people are looking at that. But if you look at the underlying with these businesses, it affects businesses differently. Now you're looking at hit inflation. It's hitting a lot of these speculative companies because it's going to be tougher for them to borrow money, even at low interest rates, because they really don't have huge asset bases. They don't have a lot of cash. They have no cash flow coming in. But that's been the Facebook model. Let's just get a billion people onto our site. We'll IPO and we'll figure out how to make money on it. We'll figure it out. And they did. Facebook figured it out. Twitter figured it out. But now you're looking at taking out a lot of debt. That's what SPACs are about as well. You know, it's a different environment when you're seeing inflation kick in, higher costs across everything that everybody sees and everybody's paying. Now you're seeing a lot of the speculative stocks really get nailed here. But that's the difference between the 20s and 10s.
Let's go back to that inflation discussion that you're having here. Mm-hmm. And you said something in there, a little nugget, ignore the 10-year. But let's kind of frame this for a second and talk about, you know, what is inflation? Something I talked about last week on the Disciplined Investor podcast, and people listening, here's the deal. So we saw 0.9% month over month on the PPI. Pretty substantial. Eye-popping was the word that was used. Mm-hmm. Then we saw, 3.4% year-over-year on inflation. That's higher, much higher than the 2% quote-unquote theoretical target that was being used. And we know that the Fed is okay with allowing for this. Here's something that I asked my listeners to consider. And I said to them, listen, one of the things that we're talking about is the idea that inflation is going to be, quote, transitory, right? Everybody's talking about this thing. Even Biden was out this week saying, hey, higher prices are going to be for a little while, and then they're going to subside. Yellen was out last week saying, you know what? Inflation is going to be pretty substantial, I mean major, over the next couple of months, but then it's all going to subside. Here's the problem, Frank. They're making it out to be that if we have higher prices due to inflation over the next few months and it's going to subside, they're making it sound like it's going to go back to where it was. However, if we have 0.4 and 0.6 and 0.9 and 0.8% over the next several months of inflation month over month, and we have a price increase of, let's say 4%, that 4% is sticky. And then if we go back to a lower rate of inflation, so we're only increasing that by 2% per year, that 4% increase from $1 to $1.04 or $100 to $104 is sticky. And therefore those prices. So they're not looking at it on absolute dollar for dollar. They're just talking about the growth rates, which I think is a big mistake for the rest of us, if we're playing along at home, to believe.
Remember this. We are following the advice of politicians. The Fed is politics, right? I mean, the Fed is the government.
Wait a minute. Wait a second. I thought the Fed was not political.
Yeah, I know. Okay. You tell me. I mean, you know, you look at Trump control the Fed, Biden as well as the Fed. I mean, these people are the Fed, right? Even the people that they get in there, it's more controlled by the government than it's ever been, right? You want proof, listen to Janet Yellen, because she said it might not be transitory. And within 12 hours, I mean, the president came out and said, she doesn't know what she's talking about. In 12 hours, she apologized, right?
Yeah.
Which I thought was hilarious. So, again, this, you know, when she says Fed. But when you look at what the government is telling you, it's in their best interest to say transitory. Why? Because they can't tell you that we have a lot of inflation. Because if they do, that means that they can't inject any more money into the system.
Right.
Which is what gets them hired, right? When people have most money, that's usually what works, right? Usually. So if we get inflation over the next year, especially heading into midterm elections, which is very, very big, considering, you know, one group controls everything, and I can, you know, I won't get political, I don't care what side you're on. It's about you. But that opens the door for the Fed to, when we see it, market's only down 4% from its all-time highs. You would think it's down 20% as of last week, right? So it's funny because what were we up? 19% last year, 25%, 27%, whatever. And we're up 15% year to date. We pull a little back, everything's bad. But what's going to happen if we pull back 15%, 20%? What's the government going to do? Again, they make it a lot easier. They don't believe in recessions, which are a normal cost of business over decades and decades. It's perfectly normal. They don't believe in it. We're not allowed to have one.
The OECD, it came out, not the OECD, was it OECD? What, they came out this week with a final on the recession. It was officially the shortest recession in history from February through April, 2 months from high to low, from low to high.
45% of GDP you injected, $10.5 trillion on both the fiscal monetary, $10.5 trillion, just to put that in perspective.
Yep.
TARP, the whole financial system, the global financial system is going to collapse. What do? We injected a total. It was supposed to be over $750. It turned out to be $480 billion to save the financial system. Just to put that in perspective, what, 11, 12 years ago, whatever, we're talking $10.5 trillion. And trillions coming. Huh. And you could see with these programs, anyone could see every time they pass them, like 10, maybe 12, 15% goes to the actual cause. Everything else is going to whatever, the infrastructure bill and everything. It's just going to what, you know, but regardless, again, that's politics. Where's the money going to go? That's what you want to be concerned about. How do you make money off of this? Well, we're looking at inflation here. Forget about the 10-year, because we all know personally we see massive inflation. We see it everywhere. Our food, energy, cars, everyone's paying their bills, homes. So what's that going to lead to? It's leading to companies charging higher prices to cover their costs, right? Even if food, you're like, well, it's the same price. The serving that they're giving you is much, much less, whether it's at a restaurant or whether you're buying it in a package bag. Now, look at it from a company's point of view. What do they have to do? Well, there is a labor shortage because we're giving people handouts, right? So now they have to provide incentives. And they are. Even McDonald's is providing to pay some tuition to get workers, right? So, you know, these businesses are operating 80% capacity, which is like break even because they can't hire anyone. So what are they going to do? They have to raise prices. And they have to raise prices a lot because their expenses are going higher. The price to hire employees, the cost to hire employees, commodities, materials. So what businesses does this affect the most is oil. Mm. I mean, look, if I want to get someone to cut my lawn, it doesn't matter. Right? You can get a guy with 25 tattoos all over his face and whatever, and he'll cut your lawn. When it comes to drilling and roughnecks, there's a special skill set. You have to pay most of these guys, almost all of them make over $100,000 with overtime plus. Now, you're looking at their costs going higher, and you're looking at a lot of headwinds in the oil industry, right? With OPEC, I mean, it's in OPEC's best interest to raise their output. You might say, well, you know, okay, why? Well, the last big war really came, not physical war, but oil war, is when we became the biggest producer in the world of oil because of shale, right? If prices go higher, what do you think these companies are going to do? They still have a ton of debt in their balance sheets. They're going to produce like crazy. That's what's happening, right? We're up to about whatever. 9 million barrels per day. I think it was up to 11 million at peak. Well, we led it. Now it's, you know, we don't want to get there because that's going to take a lot of business from OPEC, who could produce oil a lot cheaper prices. So oil is one of the companies you're seeing that sector really sell off. And the stay-at-home stocks, they shouldn't be classified in one bucket. Because, Andrew, when I look at cruises, these companies got to the point where their enterprise value, assuming for debt, were trading higher than pre-COVID. And these guys, some of them still don't have a boat in the water. I mean, they trade high. But when you look at airlines are down to December prices when we finally passed, right? Late November, December, right after the election, perfect timing. Vaccines are good. Okay, we're sending them out. That's the level where airlines are at. I don't know. We know about the Tokyo Olympics. We know about all this. We're international, the whole Delta variant, all this, you know, everything, right? I know that every place is going to open up. And a lot of these guys have, you know, their sales tied internationally. But you're flying now. You look at the airlines. They are jammed. People dying to get out. I know that in, say, 3 months, even if it takes 6 months, who cares? I know they're going to see massive demand. They have pricing power. I mean, these guys' earnings are going to absolutely explode over the next 12 months. So buying airlines on this pullback, and even hotels that are maybe domestic, like Red Rock Resorts, RRR, they own off-strip casinos off in Vegas. You know, that stock has done good, pull back 20%. So when you see things like this happening, they put them all in a basket, the stay-at-home stocks. The cruises are a lot different than the airlines. Airlines are still 30%, 35% off their highs when the cruises surged above their previous highs. So
a couple things on that, though. So the airlines, though, they're strapped with so much debt right now. They sold off so much of their of the company to – I find it really fascinating. Less than a year ago, we were questioning whether they'll stay in business. And fast forward to a couple of weeks ago, we have a record order from United.
They have to. If you look at Boeing's orders with their new MAX, right, before all this stuff happened, they had like 57 to 6,000 orders for the new plane. Fuel efficient. Now, all those orders, they took off the books. Okay. Nobody models for, hey, we're operating at great, you know, 100%. Nobody models for you know, maybe 15%, 20%. Yeah. Not for like an 80%, 90% pullback in any industry, right? Because you figure you're out of business if it goes down. But that's what happened with COVID. The government provided funding, great loans, great prices, right? Not too high interest rate. That's great. They used it. The airlines can't go out of business, right? I mean, they could go bankrupt. They're going to come back. It's kind of like Boeing and Airbus, the only two that make airplanes, right? They're going to be around forever. They're going to get bailouts continually. But, you know, yeah, they took on a lot of debt. But now you're seeing the money come back. And man, when that international travel comes back, these guys, forget it. I mean, they're going to be making money hand over fist, and so, they're starting to. You saw the airlines, they all blew out their estimates.
I would tend to agree with you that there is a long-term play here, because that's where we have to look at it. It comes to the airlines, when it comes to the international vacation, and then we have to even discuss, you know, how is the business person going to go back to flying? Before we go any further, I want to mention something and quickly just apologize for any person with tattoos all over their face that Frank insulted earlier.
That was a stereotype a little bit, yes. But you know what I mean. I had to prove my point. And I actually know people who have tattoos on their face, but I also said 100 tattoos on their face. I don't know anybody with that. I exaggerated that point.
So Indonesia is now in dire straits in terms of the problem they're having with the virus, whether it's the pandemic variants or whatever's going on. There's a big problem in Indonesia. India is not getting any better. South America problems. Asia starting to percolate. Australia locked down for 2 weeks. Now they just added again. South Africa is now still banning recently all alcohol sales, and all restaurants are closed and schools are closed. Now here's the point I'm making, though. Whether or not, again, we want to believe anything with what's going to happen and the severity of all this, there's other places that are much less percentage of the population that is vaccinated, that has the vaccine, and much more vulnerable at this point right now. With that being the case, are you worried at all that it's going to be either be number one, the potential for a global slowdown outside of the U.S., or a potential for more difficulty with the supply chain back here and to areas that aren't into such, that don't have such problems, that are going to cause prices to even swell even further, thereby a slowdown but price increase at the same time, which kind of like, in a way, maybe is a stagflation-y kind of thing.
Maybe, but let's go over the areas that you just talked about, okay? Because if you're looking at the airlines, I mean, their bread and butter is not Indonesia, South Africa, and Australia, right? It's Europe, China, and the U.S. The U.S. is open, and these areas have already shut off pretty much. These areas have already been shut off. Maybe they went down on further lockdown. So they're not generating – the numbers that they reported were fantastic without them.
Right.
So I'm saying, what happens if these things open up in 3 months, in 6 months? That's going to be extra revenue while people travel like crazy across the U.S., and Europe is opening up, which is surprising me. Really quick about the Olympics, as someone who's been covering COVID for a very, very long time, have lots of doctors and scientists that listen to my Wall Street Unplugged podcast. I even interviewed people on lockdowns early on before it even came here in China and also in Italy. And when I look at Tokyo, they were having 1,600 cases a day. And they said, no one's allowed to go there, just the athletes, right? No spectators, because we think that there's a possibility that we could see a big outbreak. And you're going to think there's a big outbreak because now it amplifies every single story. You saw one of the gymnasts, Olympic gymnasts for U.S. have it. It's going to be every place, like this part, one person has it here. I just want to put in perspective how much politics play into this, because this is why you have to invest accordingly. You're looking at the U.K. The U.K. is opening up. U.K. is doing great. Now, you look at Japan, has four times the population. 4x population of the U.K. The U.K. is opening up like crazy, and they have 24,000 cases a day, and that's great. Because it was a lot higher than that. Tokyo has 1,600 to 1,700 cases a day.
They just got labeled. Well, look at Sydney. They got like 19 cases and they're locking down.
It's crazy. But
in UK, just an FYI, earlier this week was upgraded to a level 4 by the CDC. Now, again, whether we want to level 3, level 2, level 4, I'm just saying that there's some weird stuff going on around the world all of a sudden. Yes. And that's why I think markets are getting the big word. This is the big word. The new word. Well, markets are wobbling.
Wobbling. I haven't heard that yet, really.
Oh, yeah. I'm starting to see it. You know, interest rates wobbled last week. Markets, small caps, wobbled, which is, I guess it means that they'll straighten out real quick once that they get, you know, they're getting shaken up, and then they'll straighten up. So, but right now, are you seeing right through this? Is that your point, Frank?
For me, I think there's a lot of money to be made right now on certain stocks and sectors. I think the speculative names have to get hit even harder. I mean, these are names that were up like, you know, 5X, 7X out of nowhere. Even some of the marijuana stocks and stuff. I mean, you really have to start going back to traditional, you know, metrics that matter, right? I mean, right, we went through how many years? 2, 3, like numbers don't matter. I mean, they didn't matter for anyone. To a Tesla or whatever, they're going to matter now. Your balance sheet is going to matter because
it's going to be tested. Is that what you're saying? It's going to be tested?
It is. Yeah. In a lot of industries, got to be tested because inflation is here. And most people, and even myself, because I went back and looked at this so much and studied it over the past 3 months, because 2 months ago, I'm like, wow, like it wasn't even on the radar, like inflation. It was on it, but you have to realize inflation, there is no cure for inflation. It's not like the banks go bust and the government could spend $1 trillion. The only cure for inflation is to force a recession. You have to take money out of the system. You have to stop buying bonds. Interest rates have to go higher. That's what you have to do. You have to stop spending money. That's how you stop inflation. So what's the Fed going to do? They're addicted to money. They're addicted to bailing everybody out. But now it's resulting in inflation where we're at over 5%, 5.4% on the CPI right now as of last reading, 5.4%. Remember, Andrew, when they said we have a 2% target?
Who was at 5.4%?
Yeah, 5.4%.
What is?
The CPI. Year over year, 12 months.
Oh, year over year. Sorry, yes.
Year over year, right at 5.4. Yeah. They said
it was 3.94.
It's 5.4 if you're looking at that, the increase in prices over the last 12 months, which they compare for year to year.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah, so if you're looking at that number, that's the number the Fed looks at when they said, hey, we're going to get back to 2%. 2% was at target, then 3%. Now they removed that target. Now it's the unemployment rate, right? And all of a sudden, we want to get the unemployment back to pre-COVID levels. How could you do that if we're not going to get back below 4%? There's no way. I mean, these people are making more money staying at home than they are working still. And there's some states that are still like handing out checks. So they know, okay, that's the gauge where we're not going to hit, so it's still pedal to the metal.
Oh, so wait a minute. So let's pick something. I got it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick a target that I could never hit, therefore just keep it going. So to somehow appease another objective. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the first objective, it wasn't inflation, right? In 2008, 2009, they were like, we need the unemployment rate to get to a certain level, and it hit it. We had record employment. Right?
Remember Frank? They kept on moving the goalposts on that.
You know that. We talked about that on both of our podcasts a lot. Mm-hmm. And then what was it? All of a sudden, up to like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, it was inflation. Well, we're going to keep pedal to the metal at 2%, and it stayed below 2% for most of the part. And now it's like, well, 3%. Now you notice how they went back to the unemployment rate. So you know, we're talking about politicians here, right? They're getting free handouts. They're getting money. They want to increase as much money they can to put into the system, right? That's what transitory is all about, because we all know that inflation is, unless you mean 18 to 24 months, transitory means brief. It's not going to be brief. And leading economists are finally coming out and saying that. But before the economists even come out, as everyone listening to this podcast knows exactly what I'm talking about. You know much more than the economists. You're in the real world. These guys are in rooms looking at charts, talking to billionaires and millionaires. You see every single bill that you're paying. You saw this coming. You see it still rising. You're going out. You're seeing signs in windows saying, you know, sorry, you know, please excuse our staff. These guys are working hard, but, you know, we're short staffed. We see it everywhere. That filters down to the economy. That's what we're seeing right now. So the Fed's going to be interesting what they do, because saying transitory gives them the right to keep injecting money into the system, especially if the market comes down. You know, we're getting to the point where it's coming to a head. That's the one thing that scares the hell out of me.
I think, you know what they're doing, Frank? I think that this was great cover, the COVID lockdowns, the pandemic, the stay-at-home orders, the economic shutdown. I think it was great cover to experiment.
Oh, they could do it. Think about it. I mean, you go out now. So I went to Saratoga opening day, right? We're very great friends. Everybody was out going crazy, drinking, socializing, having fun. You don't realize until that's taken away how important that is for everybody, right? Yeah. You need that interaction to talk to people, to go away. It's part of it's in our DNA. We have to do it. It's not that you could survive without it, but you see how important that is. When you take that freedom away from everyone, you're like, whoa, you know, and then now you're slowly giving it back. But, you know, look how much the rules were different. The rules weren't set across the whole board. The rules are set where, you know what, Walmart, Home Depot, Target, you guys could stay open, but everybody else needs to close.
Well, that was just stupidity. That was, you know, you could think it was a master plan on one hand to, you know, help out the bigger companies and all that. It was just sheer stupidity because they didn't know what to do. These, remember something. No, first of all, nobody was through this. Nobody knows. There's no plan. There was nothing. So everybody's like, okay, man, people got to buy stuff. So we got to keep something open. What do we got to?
I agree with you.
Let's keep that open. Do we need the small little dress store open? No. I mean, but then again, you know, then you can make the case. Well, Target sells dresses. Well, okay, shut down the section and just have the food open. I mean, that's just as stupid.
That's a fantastic argument the first 2 months when we didn't know the statistics.
Right.
But for 4 or 5 months, really, when we knew the statistics, we knew that. How come this isn't impacting young children? How come, you know, young children are perfectly fine? How come we didn't see outbreaks in any schools with 12-year-olds or under? Why are they immune to it? Why are we seeing 85 to 90% of the deaths happening with people over 65 and most of them have underlying conditions? We started getting like full stats in like crazy. That's why at the beginning it was so crazy with New York. And regardless how you feel, that's my hometown and I can't believe how the city is now. But the COVID rate, the death rate, was over 10% because, and again, nobody knew this. And I'm not tearing anybody apart, but what they did is when people had COVID, they put them in nursing homes, which inflated death rate tremendously. But nobody knew that's fine. That's why you had ships coming up the coastlines, because this was like SARS, the statistics, 10%. It's not 10%. It's well below 1%. And even 0.5%. But, so at the beginning, I get that argument. Like, hey, nobody knew.
I understand. Of course. I mean, in the beginning, nobody knew anything.
We still have this going on.
Listen, in the beginning, nobody knew anything. Let's be honest. We didn't know anything.
Of course.
The point is, now we know. So let's kind of go next thing. I'm kind of concerned about, are we going to see the potential? You don't know this. I'm asking you this more rhetorically because it doesn't matter what you say. I'm not going to believe that you know it anyway. Sorry. But are we going to have more lockdowns again? Yes, in certain areas around the world, seems like very unlikely in the U.S., especially with our vaccine take-up rate, right? But are consumers going to pull back? And I'll give you some examples. Starting to hear about, like, Florida. Like, I don't know, some weird numbers in Florida. Like, the Florida infections make up 20% of the U.S. infections in totality, and we have a 10% positivity rate. Whatever all that gobbledygook means, the fact, though, I'm asking is, do you think that maybe, I don't know, are consumers going to pull back? Are they going to be like, the hell with this?
Maybe consumers pull back. I could tell you the chances for lockdowns in the U.S. is zero.
Yeah.
People will not stand for it. You'll see riots in the street. They're done. People are done everywhere, especially places that have been on lockdown for a while. And now they're not on lockdown, like the New Yorks and the Californias. Forget it. They're not going back. I mean, if you're vaccinated, you're protected from Delta. They don't want to really tell you that in the news, but you're protected from Delta. They don't want to tell you that for some reason, right? So, Delta.
I hear that. I hear
crazy.
That.
It's crazy.
It's going to be the Lambda that's going to be the problem next.
It's just, unless we see, something else, I'm not saying that another variant. I mean, you could argue, and I'll argue with you here. And again, we want to have this podcast, and we talked about these before we came on. Like, hey, it doesn't matter what you think or I think. We want to just, find ways to make money off this. But, I would argue that through statistics, and again, I've done tons of homework. You could say that this is a form of the flu. And you might say, no way, that's no way. Well, let me explain something to you. How many people get the flu every single year?
No, I get that.
32 to 37 million people get the flu every year. How many people got the flu this year? A few thousand. How many people got COVID? A little over 32 million. It's a little bit worse than the flu. I'm not calling it the flu. And it's something that, again, we know who to protect. I'm not anti-vaccine or anything. But when you look at this, and now all of a sudden, booster shots? Wow, it sounds familiar.
Oh, don't even start with the booster shots.
We're going to need extra shots. Sounds like, so looking at this as a whole, as we learn more and more, and now finally, you couldn't speak out on anything. I can't tell you how many great doctors emailed me, and all of them said the same thing. Just don't use my name when you report this. Don't use my name. I'm like, why not? I didn't, but, you couldn't really talk about anything other than what was being told.
But let's go to human nature for a second, Frank. We do have this Delta variant. There is a lot of scare going on. Let's just for a moment, let's both of us, just for the hell of it, follow me here, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just go with the fact that it's something. I'm not putting anything other label on that. It's something. Mm-hmm. And we know the media, again, we're not going to say they're right or wrong. We're just going to say what happens. They're going to make a big deal about this. And they're going to continue on doing this, right?
Because which is going to scare people.
That's what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. So again, whether we agree with it, whether we think it's right, or whether we even... My point, though, is are we going down a path that people are going to be like, maybe I won't go to the restaurant twice this week. Maybe I'll go somewhere that I think is a little safer. Or maybe I won't go to the movies. Or maybe, that gym, man, I'm not going to go to the gym. I'm finally going to take the plunge. The hell, it's coming around again, this thing? Oh, my God. Let me just buy the Peloton.
I don't believe, because most of the U.S. is vaccinated. I think it's, 65% now of adults, and the people who aren't are probably young kids and stuff. So most of them have gotten their shots, whether you agree with it or not. So, and they know, if they've done 5 minutes of research, that Delta doesn't impact you. So if you have the vaccine. So I don't think you're going to see a slowdown in spending patterns. What I do know is that when you're hearing about Delta and scaring the hell out of people, people get a little nervous to the point where maybe I'll sell stocks. And that's why, when I'm looking at cruise lines, I wouldn't be jumping into cruise lines anytime soon. Again, they don't have as many boats in the water. They're just starting travel, and a lot of them have international operations. The airlines are well off their highs at December levels when again, we just passed the vaccine. That's how you want to look at stocks. It's not just buying on a pullback with some of these cruise names and some of these other names that have just gone up through the roof. but which ones are doing good? They had good quarters. A lot of companies that had great quarters down 20% right now. Use it as a buying opportunity. For me, eventually we're going to see the international markets open up. I don't think it's going to be longer than 3 months before we really see a big change in sentiment. Where people are starting to open up, that's going to open up to more international travel. And again, it could take time, but these guys are already performing with current operations open in the U.S. and Europe. Now, when you see other places open up across the world, I think that those are good buys. And again, domestic hotels, like you know, I like Red Rock Resorts because it was just under the radar. It's down 20% from its highs, reporting great numbers. Just, you know, business is booming right now, and that's going to continue because people are really starting to go to Vegas.
So let's kind of switch gears here, Frank. We get the fact that you like the reopening trade, right?
That's, some of them.
I know some of them. I'm saying, but generally speaking, you think we're on the path to a reopening over time, which, I mean, obviously has to happen, right? Because eventually we'll be open.
I mean, we are open, right?
We're open. No, I'm talking about globally. I meant globally. I'm talking really, really, really big picture here, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's still, you know, I'm also talking about a little bit. Remember something. We had a good 3 months with only positive kind of COVID in the rearview mirror concept, right? And all of a sudden, the last 3 weeks, it's starting to peak up again. You know, it really was kind of died down for a while, as far as I can tell.
Maybe it's me. I don't see it like coming up. I see people talking about Delta, and I know in certain news stations, they're trying to scare people with Delta, but I don't see it to the point where, you know, people aren't traveling or, you know, people are really worried about COVID in the U.S. I think this is more about Tokyo International. That was a surprise that they shut things down with those numbers. You know, putting on, like you said, level, whatever that means, 2, 3, 4, whatever they mean. I don't even know what they mean, the levels. But the level is obviously like, you know, international
travel.
In L.A.,
there's new mask mandates that they tried to put on in L.A. I'm just telling you, I'm starting to see like a little bit more pockets of things cropping up.
Did they put on another mask mandate? I mean, yeah. I know people from California have suddenly just flew in.
L.A., indoor mask mandate.
Wow, I didn't know that in L.A., but L.A. is like out there, so I get
I mean, I think they're fighting it, but that's something. The numbers that we're starting to see out of Florida, I didn't see anything about, not one number, not one statistic out of Florida for months, right? Nothing. Mm-hmm. It's quiet. And all of a sudden, we're starting to get a little bit more, you know, talking points about this. Anyway, the idea of pulling on pullbacks, some of these areas, some of the quality names, some of the things that will actually get running in the future. I get that. Are we, though, entering into a time that you're concerned or not concerned or maybe even bullish about where we are with earnings? Are we at a peak earnings point right here, or are we kind of in the fat and meaty part of where we're going to continue to see the margin expansion, the opportunity grow with all the stimulus in the markets and the reopening, where companies just, you know, just making so much money that, you know, we're still highly valued, but we're growing into them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if you look at earnings, right, I mean, they're higher today than they were pre-COVID. Yet we still see the bond buying happen in the market by the Fed. We still see money being injected in the market. We still see super low interest rates. You know, it's amazing that we're seeing this where household wealth's at all-time highs. The market, yes, they're off a little bit off their all-time highs. We're seeing price all-time highs, or earnings at all-time highs, right? So we're back pre-COVID, and they're still pedal to the metal. Again, that's a transitory thing is. But I can tell you this. The greatest companies to buy are ones that cut costs, which, again, no one models for 80, 90% of business going away because of COVID, and some of them even 100%. So what they did is they cut costs tremendously, which is great. It's super great when business comes back and starts getting back to normal because your margins explode. And that's why we're seeing earnings explode right now. However, we're also seeing the problem that they don't have enough workers to cover demand. They have to pay these workers more. By me, I'm looking at bars and restaurants paying $1,500 sign-on bonuses just to get people to work.
Right.
So what does that mean? Their costs are rising. Raw materials are rising. We're seeing energy rising. All the costs that they do to turn business. If you're a bar, you're buying liquor, you're buying food. All their costs are rising. So now, yes, you at the beginning, you cut costs, and now you saw demand roar back. That is the perfect environment for earnings, which you're seeing. I mean, look at the numbers in the banks. Look at the numbers at restaurants.
It's amazing. Amazing.
It's exporting good. I mean, they're beaten by like 60, 70%. And real quick, let me put that in perspective for everyone. That's like 15 to 30 analysts, the sell side analysts covering it. That's the average estimate. That's 30 guys who cover these stocks probably for 10 years each that are so off on these earnings. That's how much they're blowing them out. And I don't think you're going to see that going forward. They still try not to adjust them too high, but I just think the more hiring, the more costs go up, the more these margins are going to get hit. They're still going to be strong. We may be pretty close to peak earnings, though, man, because I mean, you saw the numbers, Andrew, so far, and even last quarter, too. But this quarter, with the few companies that have reported, maybe, whatever, 10%, 5%, like the last week, I should say, this P500. I mean, these numbers are insane, where I can't see that being sustained. I really can't.
Yeah, the other problem is that it's not only that. It's current, which is important. Expectations that are either unrealized or realized in terms of beats or misses on earnings and on revenues. And then the question is, you know, we still are in a situation that pretty much these analysts are worthless. Let's be honest. They're worthless. Most sell-side analysts are pathetic.
Well, they get paid investment fees to recommend the companies, basically. So,
right. I mean, well, and here
so
we
think
go.
About that. The
right.
best interest is, yeah. That's it's a conflict of interest right off the bat. So
here we are in a situation where we've had great earnings. We've had a situation where we had an unbelievable recovery. Fastest recession squash of all times, right? From moving into a recession into out 2 months. Historic liquidity injections and lower interest rates. More coming potentially as well. And companies did incredibly well from all of that. In other words, in a weird way, it's like, man, maybe we should have a pandemic every 5 years.
I know. Right? Why don't we just inject $100 trillion into the market? Yeah. It's the best thing ever.
and here we are, though, and this is kind of where I've been talking about last week on your show when I did Wall Street Unplugged, and where I talked a little bit about on last week's show as well, of the idea that where analysts are and how they've actually increased their earnings into earnings season by more than like 5 to 7% on a lot of stocks, where in totality of the stocks, where usually they pull back beforehand and they let stocks beat. And you know, you sometimes see where that ebb and flow and that tide kind of rise a little bit too high and things get almost too good. Kind of where we are in the market, a little bit like, wait a minute, when the bonds got to 1.25, it was like, whoa, what? That's good, but maybe it's too good. And I kind of have this feeling that wobble that's going on is kind of part of maybe this narrative that, you know, maybe we've reached an equilibrium right now in terms of where we are from the point of view of, okay, it's just, you know, how much better can you get if you don't have excess stimulus coming into the market? People are not just going to spend all of their money and, you know, they have some savings, of course. So I don't know. It seems like, you know, the car companies did well for a long time. Used car prices are going up. Somebody put a little thing on Twitter today.
And he said, AutoNation's numbers were insane last week.
Insane. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, hey, a car, you know, there used to be when, you know, the value of your car drops by 50% when you drive it off the lot, right? That was the old saying. Now it's like your car, the value increases by 10% as soon as you drive it off the lot.
You know? I went shopping for a car for the last 2.5 months and just wound up getting one. I could personally tell you that if you want to order a company to your specs, like just even your color, it's 9 months plus. Okay. They're going to tell you 4 or 5 months, it's 9 months plus. And if you got a minute, I'll tell you what. With the auto companies, the supply chain is a lot different. There's a reason why the iPhone went out on time, even with the supply shortage, because there's basically you have Samsung and Taiwan who makes semiconductors for almost everybody, Intel basically for themselves and maybe a few other companies. They have 80% capacity, 90% capacity reserved technology. And when you look at autos, they have a real-time supply chain system. So they kind of wait for demand and then they come in. So all the technology companies, the major ones, the Apples, everybody else, saw this coming and say, listen, we need to ramp up. And they use the extra capacity. And then the autos were late to the party. So the autos were like, hey, Taiwan, we need to ramp up. They're like, we have no capacity. So now they're building factories, which is going to take a very, very long time to hire people to build these factories in order for these autos to get back on track. And it is insane right now because you're going to go to lots that, I mean, I've been to 25 lots and they were saying, you know, one of them was 350 new cars they usually have. They have 15. And there were 15 of a car that unfortunately not too many people liked. You just can't get any cars right now. It's very, very, very difficult for new cars. That's why used cars, dealerships, and AutoNation killed it. There's a lot of companies out there. But I've been through this process, seeing it coming, and it's not – it's a long ways off. You look at shippers, right? It's a long, long way off before this is going to cure itself well into 2022. Watch out for Ford. Watch out for GM. There's a reason why they're talking up their EV portfolios, even though they're not coming out to 2030. They're talking about all these cars that are coming out. It's great. Not going to be available in 2030, most of these things, is because the next two quarters, you're going to see 50 to 70% production declines for these guys. I don't know if that's priced in or not. I really don't. Maybe they're people looking long term and Ford's in the right position. So is GM. Just be careful with
those. The only thing that could be priced in is if in fact their margin expands on some of this because they have
pricing power.
Right. Exactly. You know, I had a discussion this weekend with someone who makes boat cleaning supplies, materials. Big guy in the industry. And he said, you won't believe what's going on with the shipping rates. I said, well, I've kind of heard some of the stories. He said, let me tell you something. It used to cost me $4,000 for a container to come across on the high side. Mm-hmm. Now it's
That's cheap.
Now it's $16,000 to $20,000.
Depending where you're getting it shipped from. Yeah, forget it.
Right. He says, do you realize what kind of cost increase that is overall? It's absurd.
Food companies that say soybeans or whatever, they can't afford it because the margins aren't high enough for their products. And you're going to get outbid for those containers, and there's just no containers. There's not available space. And they're saying even the leading shippers and have, you know, great people in this industry that I speak to sending me great reports is the shortage is not going to end anytime soon. There's still going to be a huge bottleneck there. It's going to continue well through this year. And most of them are saying, you know, most likely in first Q1 to Q2 of 2022, which is a long time away.
Amazing. A lot of moving parts right now, Frank. A lot of things that are happening that are, I would say, not usual, right? And that's the reason why we do all this and why we cover all this and why we help people. You know, the thing is that podcasting got very popular. A lot of a lot of noise out there. A lot of people that come on. You do this every day. You write a newsletter. You can get his newsletter by going to CurzioResearch.com. There's plenty on there to go find what you want to do. Listen to Wall Street Unplugged. And you know, what we do since 2007, 2008, I think is invaluable for people. I'm not trying to sell this whole thing, but I'm saying seriously. So I congratulate you for your long running programs on helping people with your guests. You do a little bit different. You kind of been for a long time. I remember you were in the uranium space, in the gold space, in the natural resource space. Then you went the oils and you went the bulk and the shale. And you kind of cover a lot of different areas. Then you went into some of the security tokens. And so kind of a little bit different than what I do. I'm a little bit more traditional. Right. In what I do.
Even with that said, we've been doing this such a long time. We know each other such a long time. But even everything that I said today, I mean, it's great that you and I debate things, right? And we'll talk about it, see if we're right or wrong. It's not. I don't know if I'm going to be right on everything. Hopefully, I'm right more times than I'm wrong. Today I'm not, I'll stop doing this. But, you know, that's the interaction that we have, the respect we have for each other, where you saw us debating things, whether COVID or whatever, whether you agree or not. But the bottom line is, you know, what we care about is making you money. And there's certain sectors going to get hit with all this. As more nervousness creeps in, inflation, certain sectors are going to benefit, names we threw out there. But that's how it should be. You say, well, I hate this guy, Frank. I hate this guy, Andrew. You know, you listen to different people, different opinions, and then you form your own. And that's how you do great research.
Yes, I agree. Everybody loves you, Frank. We started the show off with that.
Not everybody.
Most people. There's a select few people that love you, Frank.
No, there's a couple out there, but that's cool.
Frank Curzio, hey, appreciate it. Again, Frank, tell them where to grab your stuff and what specials you have, what you have to offer.
Yeah, we offer lots of newsletters, even on a very inexpensive side, just to see what we're doing. And then we have high-end newsletters as well that offer private placements and things like that. But you can find everything at CurzioResearch.com. And so my podcast is WSUPodcast.com. We do it once a week on Wednesdays, absolutely free. And again, similar to Andrew, we've been doing this longer than anybody. Andrew, a little bit longer than me. And just to see how big this industry has become and the fact that we're still around doing this, it's really a lot of fun and I enjoy it. And we probably make it exciting and entertaining for you as well.
Before we go, I'm going to give you everybody open mic pet peeve I have with Frank right now. Frank.
Too fast?
No.
Well, what else?
That's okay. That's fine. That's fine for me. Frank has been promising me in writing for about 3 years now. He's going to come down and go fishing with me.
I am.
Verbally. So we got written and now we got verbal.
Yes.
And last week, you saw the fish I caught last week in that tournament.
I
came in fourth place.
That was a great fish she sent me. Holy cow.
Fourth
awesome.
Place in a tournament last week, which didn't net me anything. But nonetheless, I had the second largest fish, which didn't net me anything. However, my daughter did win the largest fish from a female angler and got a nice prize for that. So
that is awesome.
She caught a very nice kingfish and I made 12 quarts of kingfish dip this weekend.
Nice. And by the way, I'm not going fishing with you. I'm going to go fishing with your daughter then instead.
Yeah, there you go. Smart. There you go. All right, Frank, I look forward to coming down and we'll do some great fishing together.
You got it, brother. All thanks, man.
And that's going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for joining me and Frank for all of our discussions with regard to the markets and what we do, what's going on out there, what we're doing, some of the things we're thinking. make sure that you do your best to also think through all of this and to make good decisions based on what you believe is out there, not necessarily about what you believe by yourself and what you think. You know, we have to expand our horizons. We have to think outside the box sometimes. And that is really important when it comes to investing, because it's all about making money, not making mistakes when it comes to your portfolio. Life, different story entirely. When it comes to your money, you want to make sure you're properly set up in the right positioning. Thanks again for joining me, and I'm going to see you again next week. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.